I've been walking a tightrope between fact and fiction. Been wrestling with demons in small bottled prisons. Been talking to sinners who claim to be Christian, but shouting at leaders who claim to be listening. And the pendulum swings, but I can't stop the pull. Our elections are travesties paid for in full by a gang full of sellouts who worship a bull. Why can't it all just be free and equal?
Hi, this is Christina Tobin, and you're listening to the Free and Equal Network. We have Michael Levitin on our show today. He is a journalist and activist from Northern California, former correspondent for Newsweek and LA Times. He got involved in Occupy Wall Street. I heard of him, I think, back in September 2011. And so he actually has worked with Occupied Wall Street Journal. He's helped lead the Occupy caravan, that is, across the country to the Occupy National Gathering in Philadelphia. I mean, his list goes on and on. He's the editor of Occupy.com. It's been a little bit over a year now. Currently, he's freelancing and continuing in activism on so many different fronts. And we definitely discussed that in an interview. But Michael, I want to say hello to you. Welcome to our show today.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you, Christina.
I thank you for your time, and our paths crossed. It's probably been, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7 months ago, and through Larry Taubman of Occupy.com, and we just all connected other gentlemen like Justin Weeds and so on. And so I really want for our listeners that many of them may already know who you are, and I hope they do, but for those who don't, can you let them know a little bit more of your background and why you've done so many wonderful things, I feel, to really help make our world a better place. So let our listeners know a little bit more about you.
Okay, thanks, Christina. Yeah, I don't expect anyone out there to know, or it would be nice if people did. I really was a journalist for a lot of years, writing from really more mainstream publications. I started in South America I kind of wound up in the Bolivian water war, actually, when I was younger, in my 20s, and started as a journalist covering that. And went to journalism school, went over and became a correspondent, and really was always trying to blend my activism and desire to write about things that really mattered with the need to pursue, you know, what amounts to a professional kind of a career, a job. And really it did happen when Occupy Wall Street started. It was sort of that fusion moment when a group of us, journalists mostly and media makers, got together and really quickly produced the Occupied Wall Street Journal, which became, you know, a real voice and a platform to tell people who are outside the movement what this movement was about, to try to articulate what was going on here in the confusion of people suddenly gathering at parks across the country to protest this Wall Street driven government of ours, and the inequality that became the message of Occupy Wall Street, the 99% message. We articulated that, and that was a fascinating kind of almost a rebirth of journalism in a sense across the country as occupied papers sprung up nationwide. That for me evolved into Occupy.com because we saw that obviously newspapers have limited reach to the public, whereas obviously we're in the age of the website. And we wanted to create a kind of a central hub where people, as the Occupy movement and as other movements continue to grow, and as these messages get out there to the public, and the public is hungrier for alternative media that gives us 99% oriented news, not corporate news, we needed a place where people don't have to sift through 20 or 30 different websites to find their news each day and to know what's happening across the world, not just in America, in Europe, in South America, in Asia, in Africa. So, you know, we're building towards that. Occupy.com, we started back in April 2012, and we do have correspondents based in a lot of countries, and we try each day to give viewers, a quarter of our viewers are based outside the U.S., try to give people a real sense that this is a global movement and that we are connected in our grievances and in our desires for change. That's sort of the basic, and that's what I'm doing now. I edit that, and yes.
Well, Michael, what really, thank you, like, helps our listeners get a better understanding of where, who you are. And you might be surprised, I feel a lot more will know who you are in the future, if not already. But what really strikes me is that you were a former correspondent for Newsweek and LA Times. And, you know, I have close relationships with journalists. Amber Lyon is a great friend of mine, a whistleblower. She used to work for CNN. Now she's starting her own honest network and online resource and all that. So I guess my question, what I'm getting at, is that at what point was it that you decided you're no longer going to work with Newsweek or LA Times and hop on board with Occupy.com?
Well, I mean, journalism, to live as an actual correspondent, to live as a freelance journalist now, I think no one needs to repeat the fact that it's one of the most difficult things to do. I found that out. I was living in Berlin. I lived for 6 years in Berlin. That's where I was a correspondent for them, and I freelanced for lots of news, you know, the Daily Telegraph in England. I did some work with Time magazine and lots of different ones. And I always tried to write for more alternative, much more along my lines of thinking, environmental publications like Grist magazine and others. But obviously the ones that pay more, the ones that help you sustain a livelihood, are the more corporate media. And I feel like I really did do a good service writing about maybe, you know, about energy issues and communities, and also about protests in Europe at the G8 and issues like that for these corporate outlets. But you never get a chance to really write in the voice and the language that is your own when you're writing for these people, which is why when Occupy started, it just resonated. Obviously, I mean, I was fascinated the moment I arrived at Occupy Wall Street. I was actually on my way back to Berlin that week. I had a flight scheduled, and I simply, the day of my flight, it was my second, third day hanging out at Zuccotti Park. I just didn't get on it. I just couldn't leave what I saw was happening, was underway in New York. And that's, you know, the newspaper got off the ground about 8 days later with a handful of us, and that was it. And it did shift my, I don't see myself going back to mainstream, to that kind of media. I was in it. I know what it's about. And I really think that we don't need that sort of vocabulary any longer, given that the cat's out of the bag, given that we know the score in a way. People know that they're not getting their content from mainstream media that they need. And there's more and more of us all the time. The internet is a basic non-mainstream outlet itself. It's only going to grow, these alternative voices and a new language to describe the world around us, not a corporate 1% language. I see myself kind of gladly finding a new channel where I can pursue my own, you know, my creativity, my skills, whatever, in writing and editing, but not along the lines of someone else, more what I believe in.
And I think I thank you so much for telling me about that, because I didn't even know that. And for our listeners, I think that's important for them to know, of just, you had this moment where it was just, you had enough, and you're doing so many great things and so many right things. And I appreciate that so much, that you made that choice, and it really sets you apart from the rest. And thank you for that. And I look forward to connecting you to other honest media, you know, from whether it's Amber Lyon or Abby Martin, RT America. You probably know a lot of them already, and Josh Tolley and Ben Swan, because I do feel honest media like yourself. And every moment that I've known you so recently through Occupy.com and as an individual, you radiate honesty thus far, and it seems to be ingrained within you. So that being said, I wanted to, go a little bit more into your current projects of what you're doing, because not only do you sit back and write things, I mean, of course, LA Times, Newsweek, I don't know of any journalists offhand that really go out there and do things. And well, since you have the freedom to at Occupy.com, and it's a part of what you do, you've got some great projects coming up through Occupy.com. Can you tell us a little bit about, I've definitely on the radar lately, I've been hearing a lot about FedUp 100. I know it's happening early next week, illuminating the Fed. Oh, I'm so passionate about people needing to learn more about the Federal Reserve. And so can you definitely enlighten us a bit more about that project and others that you may have as well?
Definitely. Great, Christina. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think that the Fed issue is really interesting. It's both interesting in that it shows where Occupy.com, this is not a specific Occupy.com project as much as I'm really involved in it, and we're going to help promote it with Occupy.com. It's this idea that the right and the left, and whatever you want to call today's current political kind of morass in, you know, in Washington and across the country, the divide, it's becoming clearer to so many people, I think, that it's about a populist. It's about, you know, that was what the 99% actually meant. It's about most of us versus a very few of them, them being the folks who have the money and the power to make decisions and pass legislation and get judges seated who enforce that legislation and the laws. We are now, Occupy sort of needs to come and embrace other sides of the spectrum. And I think it probably, and it's like evolution now, is ready to do that. I think the Federal Reserve issue is one where people who were against the Fed from day one at Occupy showed up. So it's not as though it's a new thing that Occupy and anti-Federal Reserve people are getting together. But right now we're trying to coalesce this message and say, you know, the Federal Reserve is an institution that is not federal and it does not have reserves. It writes money out of thin air and loans the American people our own money to pay back at vast rates of interest over many years, and essentially indebts us to our own money. It is private banks. It is not federal. It is not the government. And our message is, let's illuminate it. Let's shine light on this otherwise dark institution that no one really understands, but which controls our basic economic system, controls what we invest in, controls who gets, you know, bailed out and who doesn't, as in the $85 billion the banks are still receiving monthly from the American people still today to pay off their toxic loans. The question is, like, how to bring folks who are more potentially even libertarian and who have been studying these issues for much longer, I think, you know, Occupy is a recent thing. Folks have been talking about ending the Fed or abolishing the Fed for decades. And there are many really wise scholars and economists and people who have been all about this. And it should not be a sign of weakness or of somehow, you know, conceding by people in Occupy to go over to that, to join what has already been underway for many years, but maybe to lend a different kind of a voice to it and help bring people who consider themselves maybe more on the left, like liberal, et cetera, and followers of Occupy, more over to that line and see what happens when we join up and say, no, we're actually kind of the popular base that is against this economic elite running our financial and political system. So, sorry, I actually didn't tell you what Fed Up is. Fed Up 100 is a new campaign, nationwide campaign, and it'll be launching next Monday, December 23rd, on the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve. In all cities where there are Federal Reserve branches, there are 12 of them nationwide, plus Washington, D.C., the Board of Governors. And the point is that we just want to begin an educational campaign. So Americans throughout the course of next year, 2014, the centennial of the Federal Reserve, hear what the Fed actually is, that it is not federal, and that it should actually be federalized. We want to nationalize it or federalize the Fed, put it under the Treasury, let the people and the government create our own money debt-free. That's the driving message. And that's the message we're going to bring out starting next Monday all across the country by shining lights, literal flashlights and illuminator light shows onto the Federal Reserves.
Great. Thank you, Michael. I definitely think that it's a very cool, interesting project. I look forward to learning more about it for sure and seeing how it evolves. I think the important factor is that it's great to point out, yes, that we have issues like the Federal Reserve. That's really, it's a monopoly. They've been stealing from us since 1913 when Woodrow Wilson signed it, you know, into existence. And it happened to happen the same time as the creation of the income tax. And I know a couple months ago I interviewed G. Edward Griffin. I'd love to connect you with him. He's the author author of The Creature of Jekyll Island. I think he would be a great person to incorporate into the movement of what you're doing, and happy to help you out with that. I think it's important to have a fix, though, a direction of what the people can do to actually fix this. And I look forward to collaborating with you and in greater detail. And thank you so much for that. And I guess moving on to the fix, which is why do we have the Federal Reserve? Why do we have NSA, the National Defense Authorization Act, drones spying on us, and, you know, war and drug war, 100,000 people in Mexico needlessly dying. You know, it's very obvious to me that we have a system of a two-party system that's been playing us and intentionally dividing us. And they're really controlled by, some say, and, well, follow the money, a dozen or so powerful families, Rockefeller, Rothschild, the list goes on and on. Of course, GMO is another hot issue, and so on. But so that being said, I really am so thankful and excited that yourself and representing not only Occupy.com, but I'm getting to, you know, familiar through other projects. You're going to be speaking at our upcoming kickoff for a 10-stop university bus tour at the United We Stand Festival next May, UCLA, May 10th.
Yes, I will. Yeah, that's and I think that's that dovetails completely. I mean, you know, this movement just seems like it's growing. We're at a point where we're waiting for that kind of a tipping point. And it might have to be something, actually, bringing it back to the Fed idea. It might, and I think a lot of people expect this, it might have to be another crash. And I think a lot of this are kind of preparing and girding ourselves for the next financial meltdown, which potentially could be a lot more grave than the last one we saw, because they did not remedy the ills of the system. They are trading on levels of derivatives that are astronomical and dwarf anything that have to do with a realistic economy, the quadrillions they're in. The system is, I think people understand it, our economic system is unsustainable, and our stock market's gone off the map, and the Federal Reserve has played a key role with its supremely low interest rates, you can't even go any lower, that I think they're going to contribute to this this crash, and no one knows when it's going to happen exactly or how. We do know that the folks in power will no doubt time it or try to time it and engineer it in a way that it most favors them. The question is, will Americans, and really the global, it's the globe, we help engineer the global economy, so it's really global public, but it's Americans who determine who we elect and what happens to them. Will we be educated enough to respond, and will we know the issues? Will we give them another bailout? I don't think so. I think we did that, and we've been through that, and I don't think this time you're going to see what happened last time. But the question is, what do we do? And obviously, with free and equal elections and trying to drive home that message that until we get corporate money out of public elections, until we pass legislation and change the law and force elections to go public, because and make people who want to be in office serve the people and not be hired by millionaire and billionaires and corporations that pay their way into office. I think until we get that message out, it's going to be very hard to change things. But this kind of perfect storm is on its way, and it may be the financial moment comes that helps things like free and equal suddenly become relevant and important to a lot more people who are kind of waiting for that message to arrive. And the solutions also, I just want to say something like, you know, public banking. I'm also part of that movement. That's an extremely powerful potential movement ready to step in when this economic system of ours currently, when it starts to sort of fold in different ways. The idea of bringing municipal money back into people's control, creating public banks where we loan our money out and the money stays in communities, loaned out at low interest so that people can invest in projects that matter, infrastructure projects and regional transportation and energy and everything else. Those sorts of movements are going to be ready, and that's what's so exciting, is that these things are coming on as the economic and political establishment, in a sense, crumbles before our eyes. These alternatives are in existence, and the exciting thing is that we'll be ready to take the, you know, to begin to take the reins more and more. And I think free and equal, I think what we're doing with free and equal and all the voices bringing together the, you know, people who traditionally can be considered right or left or, you know, whatever you want to say, it's really a people, coming together to demand demand justice and accountability and a greater say over our democratic, what we hope to be a democratic future, not a corporate one.
Well, we're definitely on the same wavelength, you know, and the United We Stand Fest is a kickoff for a movement, a tour across the country. Of course, we're strategically targeting universities, but we'll have live streams, hopefully, and connecting recently with people influential within Google and YouTube, making it really a social media type movement and shifting the power back to the individual voter through informing them, educating them, which will result in electing many, if not all, independents for office, beginning with the local races, the congressional races in 2014. So I wholeheartedly welcome Occupy.com, you know, joining LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, to March Against Monsanto, to PANDA, People Against the National Defense Authorization Act, Daniel Johnson, somebody great for you to know if you don't already, a real, real dynamite kid there, early 20s and is taking off. So all these amazing groups coming together, and it really is about at the heart of it, getting the right people in office. And when we do that, you know, that will be truly revolutionary, you know, taking back Congress beginning in 2014 with independents, independent, honest candidates. So, Michael, you know, we're at the end of our interview, I would say, and if you have anything else you'd like to plug, a website or any information, the floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Can I just say real briefly about Occupy.com? We just launched a new platform. It's actually the URL is commons.occupy.com. So it's really the idea of creating a space like a commons where people can come and create groups. You just go to commons.occupy.com. It's a separate site connected to Occupy where groups of all kinds can create forum discussions and not only discuss and enlarge their networks of activists and people working on issues and find new groups that are, you know, working parallel or similar, but also a place for really mobilizing and creating actions and having kind of real-time FaceTime. It'll have sort of Skype-type capability where conversations can happen in real time, and groups of people across many spheres, many places, can connect these different actions. You mentioned Monsanto and the March Against Monsanto. Brilliant action. The way they mobilized that, grassroots style, amazing. Millions of people got involved within months of creating this campaign. I think everyone wants to see more of those kinds of campaigns that emerge really quickly, really effectively, really cheaply, because people are well connected and we're using our internet and our resources as well as possible. So anyway, to just point people to commons.occupy.com to create their own space and forum and start their discussions and get active. That would be my last plug for it. And thank you very much for having me on. I'm really looking forward to May.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure is all mine here at Free and Equal and Occupy.com. Some great resources to go there. And of course, the phone's ringing right at the end of the interview. Sorry, listeners. But in any case, I thank you so much, Michael, for your time, for the show and being on it. And for everybody out there, you're listening to Christina Tobin of the Free and Equal Network. Till next time, lots of love to all of you. Take care.
Thank you.
To worship a fool.